freedom of the press is only guaranteed when you own the press.
It's time to hear the other side of the news.
Communication breakdown. Pause for the message. Wake up. Every station is a gentrification. Global syndication is the shaping of the nation. ABC, Disney, NBC, GE, Murdoch is Foxy, and with a hint, he owns a pen, the camera, the sword, by Coke, by Ford, getting broke, getting bored.
The other side of the news.
So we want what we need, what we want, what we need, but do we even know who plants the seeds? You think the media works for you, but it's a job for them, they're just selling fruit. Flim flam diagram, data jam, handicap clip, yo, you bought it. A mind is a profitable thing to waste, you want another taste, baby? Freedom is a rumor.
On August the 29th, the Ontario Ministry of Municipal Affairs and Housing quietly allowed another 2.9% rent increase for the year 2004. The Ontario and Toronto Tenants website condemns this 2.9% rent increase, and they demand that automatic guideline increases be abolished. The guideline amount announced annually by the Ontario government is the amount that landlords are permitted to automatically increase rents, whether or not they provide the services that they are supposed to under the lease. Any above-guideline rent increases applied for by landlords are on top of this yearly automatic amount. This automatic amount is supposed to be there to cover operating costs and increases in things like hydro, gas, and electricity. The guideline is based upon a 3-year average from the Consumer Price Index. And on top of the Consumer Price Index is an additional 2%. 2% increases above inflation, compounded over the past 17 years since 1986 when that formula was established, translate into an extra 40% increases in rent over and above inflation. That means that 25% of the rents of tenants go to this annual compounded index. It's a gift to landlords and it's paid for by the tenants. Many tenants already have had large rent increases under the Ontario government's Tenant Protection Act due to the temporary spike in natural gas prices 32 months ago. But the guideline amount to which these rent increases were added was based upon the Consumer Price Index that already included the price of heating, natural gas, and electricity, along with other costs. So now this is triple dipping, and it's all legislated and approved for by the government, said Robert Levitt on his Ontario and Tenants website. To add insult to injury, tenants cannot apply to have these rent increases, the late 2000, early 2001 gas spikes taken off the rent, even when those costs went back down later in the year. Now that gas prices have spiked again since the autumn of 2002, landlords can apply for another above-guideline rent increase based upon the price rise over the previous year, even though they were already given that index last year. Landlords can get rent increases for any increase in costs, but tenants cannot get decreases for any reductions in those very same costs. We pay the increase forever for a few months of spike in prices. Landlords should not get an automatic rent increase for nothing, and if they do have any special costs, they should not be automatically added to the tenant's rent on top of the annual guideline. Any rent increases must come off such items if the cost of those items come back down or have been paid off. Rent controls do not give landlords an annual guaranteed minimum rent increase on the backs of their tenants. The annual guideline rent increase is only adding to the amount of economic hardship and evictions and the numbers of homeless and must be abolished. And now on to our feature for this week's show. We attended a vigil in Gore Park for Ethel Hinchcliffe, who died trying to get back on to her social service benefits.
Thank you. That's a good way to get people to gather, isn't it? To use a drum in a public place. They hear the drum, they gravitate towards the noise of the drum.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, and the drum is part of the protest culture, you know. I come from a group called Drum Call, and one of our mandates was to go to protests, and it keeps the morale at the protest. It keeps the morale high, you know. The native tradition, there's different kinds of drum calls, you know, like this is the heartbeat of Mother Earth, and you know, when the baby was in the womb, when the mother was excited, her heartbeat used to go faster like this, and when she was relaxed,
you can actually feel it change your energy levels the minute you change the pace of that beat.
Yeah.
So they're very helpful and very useful.
Check on rent.
So they cut her off because of that?
Yeah, because what happens is that once they, you're flagged and you're paying more than 70%, it's the system that thinks that you're fraudulent, because how could you live like that, because you know, you don't have enough money left. So that's why she was cut off. And she went through this about 3 times, and then she paid for, you know, she fulfilled all of her obligations. She put in her blue slip, she put in her budget, and then, you know, she made a small little plea. She even put in an internal review saying, like, you know, why are you doing this to me, kind of thing, when, you know, I'm fulfilling all my obligations. And then she was cut off as of August 1st, but she died July 31st.
I'm here because I know from experience at Welfare Action that the system of welfare, both Ontario Works and ODSP, is increasingly harsh and punitive, and intentionally so. That's the government's intention, whatever they may say. It's part of the business agenda, and it's something that we have to stand up and fight against and struggle against to turn things around. I'm here because we need to tell our city councillors, our provincial representatives in the election that's coming up, and our federal representatives in the federal election that may come next year, that it's no longer to be tolerated that the poor are increasingly harshly treated, and the gap between rich and poor is just getting wider the whole time. And money's been actually siphoned up from poor people to rich people in the form of tax cuts. So I think that's quite unjust and wrong and immoral, and I'm here to say that we need to fight back.
No, in 1995, when Harris government was first elected, it got elected on a very radical set of policy options for housing. Basically, it wanted to toss out all of the very successful social housing policies that had helped to build hundreds of thousands of units across the country, including here in Ontario, over the previous 25 or so years. Wanted to toss all that stuff out, and it said social housing is a boondoggle. They called, in fact, a billion-dollar boondoggle. They ran a big smear campaign and said, we're going to let the private sector handle everything, and we're just going to turn it all over to them, and we're not going to have any more of this too expensive social housing. In fact, what was happening in the years leading up to the election of the Harris government was that it was a very concerted lobby by private development interests, including representatives of landlord lobby groups, in order to get the Harris government to buy into their agenda and to basically ditch this very successful agenda that had been in place before to build affordable social housing. There's no question that there was a relationship with the Tories before they got elected mm-hmm. in 1995, but what's really fascinating is how quickly they got in the door once Mike Harris was settled in as premier. Harris was elected, of course, in June of 1995, and the very first cabinet meeting of the of that new government, which was held towards the end of June in 1995, Harris emerged from the cabinet meeting, and almost the very first thing he announced was that they were moving ahead on their very radical housing agenda, including they were going to cancel, at that point they said they were going to cancel about 20,000 units of co-op and nonprofit housing that had already been approved for development, but the government decided it was too expensive to proceed, but 17,000 units were lost. Mm-hmm. Behind the scenes, what was happening was that these developer lobby groups set up a meeting with the Minister of Housing at the time. His name was Al Leach. And in fact, that there was a very secret meeting that took place in September of 1995, so just a few months after they were elected, where the developers set a shopping list in front of the housing minister. They said, get rid of social housing. They said, get rid of rent controls. They said, get rid of demolition and conversion controls, the laws which prevent buildings from that are currently rental buildings from being demolished or converted into non-rental uses.
Condos, right?
Yeah, the condos and commercial properties and so on. So they had a whole shopping list of things that they wanted the government to do. So they sat down in September of 95 in a meeting with the minister, and through a friendly source that I had in the provincial government at the time, we were able to get a copy of the document that the private sector lobby groups presented to the minister saying, here's what we want you to do. And when you sit down and look at that and compare that to what the government actually did, then you see it did everything that they were asked to do, and they did it very enthusiastically. And so by 1998, we had the rent control laws gutted, the landlord-tenant laws substantially changed, we had the demolition and conversion laws were had been repealed, social housing, of course, was no longer being funded. Through the whole list and see how stunningly successful they were. And
wasn't there incentive, though, that they couldn't afford to build new affordable housing units that the government was counting on unless these demands were met?
Well, that was their argument. And certainly it's absolutely true that they can't afford to build, they couldn't then and they can't now afford to build housing for very low-income people. And the reason is not ideology, but it's simple economics, mm-hmm. that when you're talking about a household, let's say, with an annual income of $10,000 or less, you know, they only have a certain amount of money they can afford to pay for rent.
Ethel was cut off of her benefits, but it's very sad that it's like a society now of haves and have-nots. And Canada has medical benefits, but there's no rent controls anymore, and that's a big concern. And I don't know, the rising cost of everything. In Hamilton, I mean, we have prevalent haves and have-nots of people who are struggling, and we have a land of plenty in Canada. Our police officers make $69,000 a year now in Hamilton, and it's horrible that she would die and get cut off of her services. It's not a good country.
I'd like to say that I too am sorry for this lady having to die because of these policies, and I think it's endemic in our system. We are being oppressed, people who are poor. I'm in a wheelchair, as you can see, sitting beside me. I had a bad back for 15 years. My family doctor, since I was a little boy, was trying for disability. When he got cancer and retired, every other doctor for 10 years just thought I was a hippie and a radical and was a liar. And finally, I went to the hospital and they found a tumor the size of my fist and cancer from T10 to L3. And so now I'm on disability. But before that, I was living on $520 a month, paying $425 towards rent, couldn't have a phone. And this is endemic in our system. And the doctors judge us, and our governments judge us, and we have to change it, and this is part of how we do it. We spread awareness by having little vigils, and you know, I see you at the same, it's the same people, but that's how change evolves. It evolves by us chatting and supporting each other and growing.
And you're with?
I'm with